What's important also in Ireland is, in terms of the tens of thousands of children who went to the institutions, and remember, these children were locked into institutions, they were far away from home, they weren't in your normal school, so they were at the hand of what was basically, you know, camp commanders. The Christian Brothers, the nuns, could do what they liked with these children. The graveyards in most of these institutions are full to the brim with children's bodies. In some instances, we don't know who those children are, where they came out of, what they died of, or the cause of death. And in some instances, in the Magdalene nunneries, we do not know the names of those individuals. So here's the Catholic Church. The first thing, as it says in the King James Bible, you shall know me by my name. Call me by my name, and I'll be known as a Christian. These women in the graveyards of the Magdalene nunneries had no names. Had no names. And when they were dug up 5 years ago, because the grounds were being sold for redevelopment for apartments, they were put into boxes, six and seven into boxes, and driven across the far side of the city and burnt. The remains were scattered as ashes. Still no names. The police force in Ireland, the Department of the Environment, and the nuns and the undertakers and all the state agencies are involved in the exhuming of anybody, and none of them dared to ask, who are these women? Who were these women that were in this convent, in this Magdalene nunnery, who had no name? So they lied there. And the people who will look for them will never know who they are. It's also important to know that there is no statistics in Ireland of how many people with disability, that is intellectual disability, physical disability, went through those systems. None. It's important to know at this moment that in relation to institutions in Ireland, particularly those that are dealing with intellectual disability and physical disability, there is no inspectorate. The simple facts are these, is that from the foundation of the Irish state in 1922, when England was getting a bit of enlightenment in relation to the incarceration of children, Ireland was going the opposite way, and we actually began to build more industrial and reform schools and began to lock more and more children up. There were more children in Ireland locked up in that time than there was globally. There were thousands of children locked up. The reason being is that there was vast amounts of land acquired by the Catholic Church, and they needed young children to work this land. So that's what they did. They used these children as slave labour. Well, were there as slave labour, they were sexually exploited and they were physically beaten, etc., etc., etc. To go on about any one given individual case, in my own situation, I was in probably incarcerated from a very early age, from 1963, which is when I was about four or five. I went to my first institution. I came out of the institutions when I was about 19 years of age, and I tried to fit my way into my world and into my person and who I was. I have fought over 40-odd years to get some measure of the truth brought out. My experience was very simple. Nobody believed us. Nobody wanted to know. Nobody cared. The middle classes weren't interested, and the working classes, which I'm from, saw it, you know, as something not to be talked about. In Ireland, anyway, the act of sexuality is not something that we talk about readily, because the whole place is like a church. It's completely and absolutely agency-captured by the Catholic Church and its agents and servants, so it's completely closed down. To discuss child rape, child sex assault, sexual abuse in this day and age in Ireland is still a rather difficult thing to do, because it hasn't really been looked at. And to say that it hasn't been looked at in Ireland, I would say the same thing globally. There isn't any evidence that I can find that the sex attack, child sex abuse, paedophilia, and the phenomenon now that's coming out of the Catholic Church in relation to faith-based abuses is not being dealt with at all. We are not discussing the issue. Society is burying its head into the sand and are uttering the issue. Everybody thinks for some strange reason that if they send Johnny and Mary off to school, they're safe. They're not safe. They're not safe at all. And that's what people need to understand. These issues, which are supposed to be historical, are not historical. There's no such thing as an elderly paedophile who won't offend again. Who's to say that? They haven't been vetted, they haven't been brought before a court. And, as I say, recently we had the return of Father Oliver O'Grady to Ireland. Now, Father Oliver O'Grady is wandering around the streets of Dublin, and he's a serial paedophile offender who left this country and having served their lengthy sentence. Father Oliver O'Grady has no intentions whatsoever. But he's not a priest anymore, but I call him Father Oliver O'Grady has no intentions whatsoever of giving up his acts. I'm not suggesting for a moment that there isn't, you know, some manner or means in which we can curtail these individuals. But the point of what I'm here for is that it's about accountability. And when the Church brought Father Oliver O'Grady back to Ireland, they simply threw him back onto the streets of Dublin and had nothing whatsoever got to do with him. So we have Father Oliver Grady walking around, but Father Oliver Grady is only one of hundreds. One of absolute hundreds. It's really interesting, you know what I mean, but there was a prison in Ireland which was in Port, it was in the Curragh camp, you know, and they actually used to call it the Vatican, because everybody that was in that particular jail was a cleric or a priest or a religious, and most of them were in for sexual offences. So the issues are here, is that on a global scale, we are looking at an enormous, massive issue of child sexual abuse within the Catholic Church. Unprecedented. And it's only unprecedented in the fact that it's come to light now. There is no research. There is no police force internationally working to work with actually gathering in the information on the trafficking of these paedophiles by the Catholic Church and by the bishops. There's no accountability. There doesn't seem to be a mechanism that the police authorities at borders can stop these individuals and say, you can't come into our country because you actually have an allegation of child sexual abuse against you. This doesn't seem to happen. It seems to me that if you're an ordinary individual and you commit a crime, you'll see the electric chair. But if you put a collar on yourself or you're part of a religious organisation or you're part of some respected institution, you're given another kind of a law altogether that doesn't seem to apply to the rest of us. As a person, you know what I mean, who has not only survived and experienced these abuses, but also I would see myself as in a full recovered position in my life, I have written about the issue, I have performed plays about the issue, and I believe that the issue is one of grave concern, and I believe the one is of enormous political significance. I think it's extremely important that I do not believe that the system out there has the system to deal with this particular issue. There are far too many people in the system who are embedded in the system and are conditioned by the system. It was extremely difficult in Ireland to get the police forces to investigate priests, bishops, nuns and brothers. It was extremely difficult, having gone and spoken with them, to get them to understand what had actually happened, because they had removed themselves entirely from us. They had removed themselves from us. There was nothing but the greater glory of God, and we did not matter. We did not matter. Their lives did not matter. And the idea that the rape of a child was merely a moral failing was preposterous. The unfortunate situation is that we are not seeing a significant number of middle-class families or individuals coming forward with the information. Because perhaps through their education and perhaps through their family support, they're able to absorb this abuse into their lives or use it in their sexual histories. I don't particularly know. But I know that for those who are vulnerable, who are coming from a working class background, it is much more difficult because the supports aren't there. What's really important now, and what I do see happening, and which I'd love to see, is that this movement for accountability, for responsibility, with regards our childhoods. And your childhood is not something that stops in your childhood. Your childhood is something you carry with you all through your life. And that's what you mirror your life through. It's our duty to ensure that proper legislation, proper guidelines, proper boundaries, proper accountabilities, and proper justice systems are put in place. It's extremely important that in relation to the statute of limitations, and it was spoken here earlier on, that the average individual who's coming to report a crime that was committed against them in their childhood is about 40 odd years of age. It's extremely important that these crimes are acknowledged and that they are investigated, and that they're not statute barred. It's extremely important that the law step up to the plate here, and that the law acknowledges that it is out of step with this phenomenon that's happening, particularly with regards to the issues regarding the Catholic Church. There is this situation that is embedded and conditioned into people, that for some strange reason, that a child that got raped and tortured and beaten to an inch of its life in a Catholic institution was much better off it happening in there with people who cared about him than it happening on the streets in New York or on the streets of Dublin. This was the thinking that was going on with people, that really they were trying their best. And because it was a priest, because it was somebody in an institution, it wasn't really a crime. On one radio programme that I happened to hear, the person who was doing the program was simply saying that when he was asking about abuses, wanted to know, was it tender? you know, you think, where's this person's head from? My time has come up. There's a lot more things that I would have liked to say, but I will say this much. We are merely at the beginning of the very beginning of a very icy, glorious, liberating journey. I see this issue a global issue. I see this issue an international issue. I see this issue a historical issue going back over 100-odd years. I know people who are in their 90s who were abused. And I also see this advocacy with the Centre of Constitutional Rights and SNAP growing into a strong international organisation fit for purpose for 21st century global world. Thank you very much.